the House please come back to order? We have for consideration on third reading, committee substitute for HB 108, finance amended. Okay, I just read the right bill. I'm sorry. Oh, and the clerk will now read the title.
Committee substitute for House Bill 108, finance amended, entitled An Act Relating to the Use, Operation, and Regulation of Boats, Establishing a Uniform State Waterway Marking System, and Providing for an Effective Date. We're in third reading.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this morning when I woke up, I was obviously nervous about introducing this bill in its full context. And I was trying to remember where I came from. I come from the Bitterroot Mountains, where I think the most prominent piece of water we had up there was a creek. We used to wade in it. We never swam in it because it was too cold. When I was 20, or approximately 20, I went into the Coast Guard, and they not only taught me how to swim, but they taught me many other things about saving people's lives. And I remembered, and I think it's important to this bill because it'll point right to what we're getting at here, two incidents in my Coast Guard career, both on the Columbia River, both involving beautiful, very young, blonde-haired girls, both in the water on a high stream, the first one without a life jacket. We got underway from our rescue depot, which was right on the side of the Columbia River underneath the bridge. We went out, Robbie, my motor mac, and myself. I was the boatswain at that time. We got up next to this little girl as we were coming up, and I couldn't get my arms on any of her clothing, and so I finally grabbed her by the hair because she looked like she was really ready to drown. And I hung on to her, and I couldn't lift her out of the water. I just couldn't get her out of there. And our boat was going down in a high drift of the high water there. It was a freshet on the Columbia River. And a tree came down and took that little girl right out of my hands. We never saw her again. And she died. Almost a year later, we got another call. Somebody had seen from the bridge a boat with two teenage girls and a small girl in that boat. One of the teenagers had a life jacket on, one did not. And this little girl had a life jacket on. And once again, we came up to the little girl. The other two girls actually were able to swim to the side, and they got out of the river on their own. Their lives were saved, including the one without a life jacket. But we got up to this little girl, and it was almost an identical situation. And I can remember this going through my mind, and I was not going to let this girl go. But fortunately, because she had a life jacket on, she was buoyant. I couldn't get her into the boat. She was heavier than the one the year before. So I went into the water myself, over the side, hanging onto the gunwale. We had just a small boat. And I decided between me and the motor mac, the same motor mac, that we had to somehow boost that girl out of the water. And I went down just as low as I could, and I got underneath that girl, and I just boomed up. And she literally jettisoned into the boat. And then I was too weak to get back in the boat myself. So I just hung onto the gunwale, and they took us back to the dock. And the EMTs were there at the dock, and they took care of this young girl. And she's probably a 50-year-old that I will ever have the opportunity to introduce to the people of Alaska. This bill would establish a comprehensive recreational boating safety program in our state for the first time. We're the only state in the union that does not have one. We're authorized to do that and have been for years. It will transfer vessel registrations from the U.S. Coast Guard to the Division of Motor Vehicles, allowing persons to register a boat at any DMV office by mail, online, as well as from the boat dealers that they buy their craft from. Regulatory authority for boat safety equipment required by the Coast Guard and in some cases state statutes will be transferred from the Coast Guard to the state of Alaska. The bill specifies the required equipment for boats by class. That's in the federal law, and it's also in the statutes at the present time. Safety equipment, which includes fire extinguishers for powered boats, safety equipment such as ventilation for those compartments that house an engine down below, extremely important, and back flame arresters to stop that spark from blowing that boat out of the water, are all required at the present time. A light for night cruising, a very, very essential thing. A sound-producing device. And most important, fire extinguishers. This is a sound-producing device. If you were out in the ocean, as I have seen many times, and it's dark, and the seas are relatively high. Sometimes the only thing that draws your attention to somebody in distress is a sound. Here's a simple little sound that can be attached to your life jacket, and your child or your wife or your sister or your father or whoever else it might be can have their life saved because you have that little device. The bill will combine the life-saving forces of the Coast Guard with new life-saving forces of the state of Alaska. It will expand boat safety education into our schools, Mr. Speaker, down on the docks, and still continue the wonderful working relationship with the Coast Guard Auxiliary and those active duty Coast Guardsmen, city rescue teams, Boy Scouts, many other boating safety enthusiast organizations that now exist down on the docks and throughout our state. We'll all be working together to do something very constructive. There'll be no new state money required. The program will be paid by federal Wallop Bro funds, and the registration fees that are collected by the DMV. Now, the marine fuel taxes, federal marine fuel taxes that we already pay in the amount of approximately $600,000. You never know for sure because it's on the basis of how many gallons are actually purchased. But a certain percentage of those federal taxes now flow outside the state of Alaska and go to states that have a boating safety program, not to the state of Alaska because we do not have one. With passage of this bill, those monies, approximately $600,000, will flow back to the state of Alaska to be used for education and other things. The registration fee, which is about $24 for 3 years of a motorboat, will stay in and pay for the registration of those boats. Now, some people say, well, what good is registration? I can tell you from my years of experience in the Coast Guard that when you find a boat on the beach somewhere, if you can identify who owns that boat, you may be able to save lives. You can find out how many people were in that boat, what they were wearing, how qualified were they, could they swim, did they have life jackets in the boats, things of this nature. If you don't have that kind of information, what you end up doing is trying to blanket. You tend to throw everything that you have out in there. And I've seen it right here in Juneau with missing hunters and boats that tried to make it to the beach. And you end up with days and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of expense, helicopters in the air and things of this nature. So that's really very important. The whole emphasis of this bill is education by Alaskans in an area-appropriate manner. Programs like Kids Don't Float, and I just gave you an example of how kids don't float. Nobody floats, quite frankly, not naturally, unless you have some sort of a flotation device on, or you're able to simply power yourself to maintain that precious breath of air. But we've had this Kids Don't Float program for the last couple of years, or at least a year, and we found that in one case here that we know for sure, 5 lives have been saved as a result of this simple little program in a pilot program this last year. That program would be embodied to the state of Alaska and become part of a concentrated effort by the people in Alaska. They have loaner life jackets down on the docks. A lot of times people go down there to boat for the first time. They don't have life jackets for the kids. It's important to have a life jacket you can put on, and you should put them on your children. And our law says that if they're 13 years or younger, you must. That's in the current law, and the federal law requires it as well. We have no way to go up, Mr. Speaker. We already suffer 10 times the national average of marine recreational boating deaths. 83 adults and children died in our state just over the last 3 years. Every other state in the union has a boating safety program, and in most cases have cut their fatalities in half by virtue of simply being aggressive. By working with the Coast Guard, our volunteers can conduct courtesy vessel examinations for new boat owners. Right now, anybody can buy a boat. They can go out and buy a $26,000, $30,000, $40,000 craft, have absolutely no license. We don't require a license in this bill. Get in that boat, take off with their family, and in many cases, not really know what kind of a medium they're in or what kind of power is currently put within their hand and what kind of hazards they might have. As to the registration, having a uniform system will aid in searches for boats that are found along the banks and for those that are not found. Mr. Speaker, people are eager to take on this program. It's not an onerous program. It is not a bureaucracy. It costs but $24 for 3 years to register your boat. We give the option now by the amendment yesterday, day before yesterday, to the paddle boats. And if you're ever lost at sea, you'll be very glad that we've got this kind of a force, this kind of an emphasis in this state. And I would urge people to vote yes, and I'll try to answer the questions at the end of the thing here. Mr. Speaker, I'd love to see all the green lights. As I said before, I have seen too many people tragically lost at sea. That water is not a normal medium, and kids don't float. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Dyson and James and Jewel and Philip.
Thank you, Speaker. Generally, it is my commitment to not add much to the debates and speak only when I think it's necessary. It happens to be that every issue on today's calendar is something I care pretty passionately about, and this is certainly one of them. I grew up living on a boat. I didn't know that a life preserver wasn't part of my body until I went to school, because my mother put one on me as soon as I rolled out of bed in the morning, and two or three times fished me out of the drink with a boat hook, and I was floating around. Every provision in this bill I could speak to, give anecdotes, and it probably wouldn't, some of them are real fun, but probably wouldn't add much to the debate here. But there's a problem that I always have when we consider mandating stuff, passing more laws, and that is, my wife calls this cognitive dissonance, when my principles are in conflict. And certainly, everything that's here, we should be all doing. And because they're quite reasonable. And in fact, generally as a population, we don't. And at times, I personally haven't. And it's really strange, that dichotomy amongst us. The late 80s, a delightful young man lives up on the hillside, and a very good friend, Bill Posey, said, "I want to go commercial fishing." And I said, "Well, you want to think about that." And he wanted to do it in the worst way. And he said, "So how do I get started?" And I sent him, told him that, "You really want to do this, go to the docks and start hanging around, make acquaintance with some fishermen." I suggested Kodiak, and he went to Kodiak. He signed on with an old wooden seiner called the Western Sea. And they left Old Woman Harbor with the seine piled up on the rear deck and the jitney or the seine skiff pulled up on top of it in deteriorating weather, and were not heard of again. We sat up with his parents for 2.5 days while the search went on. Probably people that Bill trained were out looking for him. In the five people that lost their lives, was a young man named Barry, Peter Barry, and his father was a former ambassador. I think he was a Yaley, maybe it was Harvard. And they said, "We can't let our child die in vain." They pushed through working with their national congressional delegation, Commercial Fishing Vessel Safety Act, and I think it was went into effect in 92, and that forced people like me, who make my living on the sea, to have survival suits for everyone, have an EPIRB, that's an electronic position indicating beacon that you can both physically activate it when you jump overboard or when, but also that it will automatically deploy if your vessel goes down. In addition, life rafts that will automatically deploy and inflate, and mandates personal flotation gear in addition to the survival suits, a sound device like my colleague from Juneau demonstrated, and a strobe that you can push off to go at night. All of us in the fishing industry, well, I don't know if everyone, we're consistent about a few things. We all bitched. We all complained about the cost. And probably half the, you can see in the literature that the survival rate has really gone up, and the rate at which we're losing people in the commercial fishing industry has diminished by about half. For those of us, we are professional mariners, we are required by law to go to the aid of another vessel or a person in distress, to leave whatever you're doing. The advent of survival suits has transformed sea rescues. It used to be that after an hour in the North Pacific, you quit looking for people and started looking for bodies. There have been people who have been survived for days now. People have gotten ashore and survived for weeks because of the gear that the law forced us to get that we didn't have enough sense to do on our own, and people are alive because of it. The industries around have responded. There's better and better gear all the time. More efficient, more reliable, requires less maintenance. I've lost a couple people out of Dutch. A fisherman out there got sick and tired of losing friends. He invented and now marketed sweatsuits or sweat jackets rain gear and stuff that's got an inflatable liner in it, so you can wear it just like your rain gear. And if you go overboard, you can pull a lanyard and it'll inflate on you. And it's amazing the difference that it's made in the survival people who go overboard. So I'm one who doesn't like laws, but I have kind of an old biblical view that the law is one way that we as a culture come together to state our ideals. And it won't be perfectly followed, but we are saying you've got to be safe when you operate a vessel. Particularly, you've got to look after the kids. You've got to have this a minimum amount of equipment there, and it sets a goal for us in a minimum, but kind of intrusive enforcement action. So I said what I wanted. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Representative James?
Mr. Speaker, I want to compliment the representative from Juneau for bringing this piece of legislation forward, not necessarily specifically because it's such a good piece of legislation, but because of the conversation that has transpired from having this bill be on the agenda. And from the folks that I've heard from, you know, there is, you know, why do you make me do what I don't want to do? Because I only want to do what I want to do. But there's a few things that I want to say about this issue and maybe kind of change the tone to not be so somber even on this issue. And that is, I don't swim. I grew up on a farm where I wasn't exposed to getting in the water anywhere except taking a bath. And by the time I was an adult type person, I just was so afraid to get my face wet that I could never learn to swim. I tried a number of times and I still can't. But my children all know how to swim, and they learned to swim at a very young age, and I was insistent, we lived in town then, that they took swimming lessons and that they learned to swim. But I have to tell you a little story about one incident that happened when we were swimming in a hot spring. It was a mineral springs, actually, more than hot. It was the mineral springs near where we were, and they had a roof of where the lifeguards were sitting up there watching everybody who was swimming in there, and I was sitting on the side because I don't even wade well, but my children were all in the water playing, and of course the older two could swim well, and they would go around and jump off the diving board and swim around and go back up and do it, and the little one, you know, and you can tell this is a long time ago, she's 47 now, but she was about 4 years old then, and I was a very, I think, concerned parent to try to keep my children safe. She wore a life jacket because I wouldn't let her get into water without one because she didn't swim like the other kids did. And I was nervous about them not having one, even though they swam, because I was so afraid of water. But she was having the most fun, and she would run around, get on the diving board, jump off, and then paddle herself down to the end, turn around, go back, get on the diving board again, and jump off. And finally, the guards who were watching called out, "Say, little girl in the red suit, can you swim?" And she says, "Yes." Then they says, "Why do you have on that lifeguard? Why do you have on that life jacket?" "Because I can't swim without it." and so then, of course, their following statement was, "I think you better stay down in the other end of the pool." She wasn't satisfied with that, and shortly we left. But the point that I wanted to make is, in this issue, as a concerned parent, I was absolutely sure my children are going to be safe because I don't swim. And I think that sometimes when you do swim, that you throw caution to the wind, and because you think you can do it, you don't understand. There's the undercurrents, and there's all these other kinds of things that can deter you from being able to save yourself. I'm really proud to be able to press the yes button on this piece of legislation in a state where water is so important. Absolutely every one of us in our way we recreate, I think it is very important to have a law that makes us all save ourselves from ourselves.
Thank you, Representative James. Representative Jewell?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do rise in support of this legislation, although I do have some concerns. One of those concerns was taken care of when we did the amendment Monday. It had to do with paddling. One of the concerns I had was with some of the equipment that we use when we go out whaling. And I have to share with the body that while we were having this discussion, a question was asked with those, humiaks we call them, as if they were powered by engines. And there was a quip by a young lady from Bethel who said, "No, they're powered by Eskimos." uh, I know. I felt the same way. I was just sad I wasn't the one that thought of it. Some of the concerns that I have about the legislation have to do with some communities' availability to DMV, the questions of how this gets enforced, and things of that nature that we don't generally have available to us in rural areas. And in terms of education, you know, not having the facilities, if you will, for some of that education to occur, and hopefully at some point in time, we'll be able to address those issues. But I think the bill addresses some bigger issues. About 15 years ago, I was asked to help with some narration on a TV production called It Could Happen to You. And if any of you have seen this, they generally start running it in the springtime, I'm told, on the Weather Channel in that short little break. It has to do with personal flotation devices, having them versus not having them. And they kind of simulated a boating accident where somebody didn't have them. And while I felt good about volunteering to do that, that program cost me money. Because up until that point, I didn't have personal flotation devices of my own. And when I got done doing it, I felt that if I was getting on something like TV to say it should be done, I better be ready to do it myself. And so that cost me a lot of money. And it's still costing me money because my children haven't quit growing. And there is a somber side to a lot of this, that unfortunately, when accidents do occur, especially out in the rural areas, we know those people, we're connected to them. And flotation devices are not used. Many times, there's no recovery. And I've watched families suffer and not be able to bring closure. And so, while it may take a little bit, and there might be some concerns of the cost of buying the jackets, other forms of personal flotation devices, I think it's a step in the right direction. And it is something that we need. And when you start the education process, us, with our kids and these things, just think how much ahead of the game they're going to be with their children when that education process starts a whole lot earlier than the people that we can hopefully save. So, thanks to the sponsor for this bill, and I will be voting for it. It's about time.
Thank you, Representative Jewell. Representative Phillips?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In addition to the remarks made by my friend from Kotzebue, I'd like to say, I'd just add to his remarks, I did see the television program that he talked about, and it is a very, very strong message that he sends out to all Alaskans about personal flotation devices. But I also had to observe that this job must have been really tough on him because he has a lot more gray hairs today than when he made that film. On just a little more somber note, I come from a community that is very, very heavily impacted with boating safety issues. And one only has to come and visit our Seafarers Memorial and look at the hundreds of names of loved ones lost at sea to realize the gravity of this issue and how much we need to do as a legislative body. We need to do everything in our power to bring down that number of people that we have lost in Alaska, good Alaskans, and I certainly support this legislation.
Representative Phillips. Representative Cowdery and then Smalley.
Thank you. I'd like to speak in favor of this also. I own two boats. It's awful hard to justify to your wife one boat, but I've got a good wife, and so I have two boats. And the safety issues of this bill, I'd like just to point out the Coast Guard Auxiliary. It's a group of volunteer people, and they put on courses in safety. I think the course in my town the next time is in April, And not only will you learn a lot, not only they're not going to come in your boat and write you up, they will offer to come on your boat and correct, you know, whether your fire extinguisher, your flotation devices adequate and everything. But not only that, from an economic standpoint, in my two boats that I own, since I've taken the course, my insurance rates are down almost $1,000 because just the fact that I took the course. I've taken it twice. So I would just like to encourage everybody that if they do have boating, even if they just small boats, to go take that course. You learn a little bit of a lot of stuff about certain things. Certain things maybe you don't need to know. It has to do with inland waterways and stuff. But someday you might be on them waterways and need this. So I just this is a good bill. I got on it with my good friend from Juno, and I urge everybody to support it.
Representative Cowdery. Representative Smalley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to congratulate my colleague, my friend from Juneau, for this piece of legislation. There were some great comments that were made today. In the amount of time... Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to congratulate my colleague, my friend from Juneau, for this piece of legislation. There were some great comments that were made today. In the amount of time in Alaska that Alaskans spend on the water, when it's water, is tremendous. And so this piece of legislation is crucial. It must pass. I hope that everybody supports it. Clearly, I think all of us can see possession. Clearly, we can see that things are going to be displayed. Clearly, everybody is aware of the use, Mr. Speaker. It makes sense. There is nexus. If you have these devices, you will be here the nexus day.
Drawing everything together. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hard to follow a speech like that. I rise to speak in support of the bill, but also, Mr. Speaker, to intimate a few concerns that I still have. As you know, Mr. Speaker, in the finance committees, we've emphasized over the last few weeks missions and measures within departments and agencies. And it draws me to really ponder this bill in terms of its mission and measure. My belief, Mr. Speaker, is that this bill really strives or seeks to improve heightened safety for Alaskans, particularly the most vulnerable Alaskans, kids. Having two of them myself, Mr. Speaker, and having a boat, I'm very cognizant of dangers that are posed to children being out on the water and the need to have a life jacket or personal flotation device. And we've heard a lot of talk in the Finance Committee and on the floor here about how this bill is going to make Alaskans safer. Safer through education. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'm a believer in education, but I also understand, Mr. Speaker, that education takes time. When it comes to the safety of our kids, we don't have a lot of time in terms of providing safety for them on the water. Some of them just don't understand the necessity of having a life jacket, my daughter being one of them. She wanders down by the water, If it weren't for the fact that her mother and myself require her to have a life jacket on when she goes down by the water, she wouldn't put it on because she doesn't understand. And that brings me to my point, Mr. Speaker. If the true intention of this bill is to save the lives of Alaskans, the highest and best use of the funding for the first year of this bill would be to place life jackets at every possible location of public entry into waterways in Alaska. Make life jackets available to the kids, to adults, who in most cases either don't understand or have just forgotten that they should have them there. Mr. Speaker, I think that is the point that's been overlooked in this legislation. I've raised that point before, and I raise it now only to those who are going to be developing these educational programs. Make your first and highest priority with these funds getting life jackets out. Now, I know, Mr. Speaker, I'm speaking in conflict of the Chamber of Commerce crowd who are out there selling these life jackets. I understand that, Mr. Speaker, but I believe this is a higher and better calling. The fact that if we provide these life jackets free to kids and to adults who have forgotten them, we have a better chance of saving Alaskans' lives than by hopefully over time educating them on the value of life jackets. I think that's the best thing we can do, and that's the reason I'm supporting this. But I hope that the people who are going to be utilizing these funds are going to be instituting or paying attention to that call. The last point I'd like to make, Mr. Speaker, is one issue that I've had to grapple with in my own mind is an effort that we have had here within the legislature to try and control the size and scope and growth of state government. And I'm not going to criticize those who vote against this bill because it's an issue that I wrestle with. Because truthfully, Mr. Speaker, we are going to expand state spending by nearly $500,000 this year with the passage of this bill. $500,000 new state spending that won't have been authorized in the past. That's true. We are also going to be adding 5 state employees with the passage of this bill. That is also true. However, Mr. Speaker, in my mind, the value of this program, the value of what we're trying to do in saving Alaskans' lives, overshadows the overall criticism that we're all going to be subject to about the fact that we allowed state spending to grow. And that, Mr. Speaker, is why I support this, despite those objections. Thank you.
Representative Mulder. Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I'd like to declare my conflict. I own 2 votes, and I'd like to be not only excused from voting, but debating. No objection? Okay, I'll sit down. I didn't think I'd. I thought I'd get a rise on that one.
You wouldn't
like
want
fish.
To divide the question. No, I won't. Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know you're all tired of hearing from me. Believe me, I am too. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to maybe open my remarks with I have deep respect for my friend and his experiences, and he's certainly had a distinguished my friend from Juneau that I was speaking about certainly had a distinguished career in the Coast Guard. As a matter of fact, at one point I sat down and talked with a Coast Guard recruiter. I had a good friend that was a friend of the family's who had an island on a part of an island on a lake in Ontario, and we used to spend a good part of our summer there. And our next door neighbors, boys who were a little bit older than me, were in the Coast Guard, and he had me pretty psyched up on what a great life it was. I went down and talked to a recruiter. At the time, I was riding a Harley-Davidson, had my hair halfway down my back, and I don't think they were too excited about me joining them. But anyway, the point is that I spent a lot of time on the water. I grew up around the water, both that experience in Canada. I lived in Florida. I lived on the Intercoastal Waterway. When I was a 16-year-old, I had a 16-foot hydroplane that my parents only knew how fast that thing really went. What I was doing with it probably would have never let me have it. My parents had a couple of boats growing up. We had a 30-foot sloop, a 28-foot Chris-Craft. I've grown up around boats. I grew up with an outboard stick in my hand. I'm probably, every chance I possibly get, if I have an evening or a weekend, I'm out on the water in Juneau. And Mr. Speaker, I've had some pretty intimate experiences with what we're dealing with here. Here's some of my concerns. There are those within the Department of Natural Resources that would like to see waterways shut down, motorized vehicles, motorized boats. And I think this could be a tool used by some people that are zealots against motorized vehicles to have a lot of enforcement. You know, rural Alaska, I spent a lot of time in rural Alaska, Mr. Speaker. My wife was a biologist when we got married. She worked for the Department of Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And I used to fly out to her fish camp out in Nishgack River, Nuyukuk River, and I would fly out there and I'd put my little Zodiac on that river and I'd run back into Dillingham. It's pretty, that was back where the lodges all discovered that country, and oftentimes, I remember one time I saw 2 boats on the river the entire time. It was a pretty remote section of the world at the time. And, you know, there's the skiffs. I remember the skiffs in the village. You know, you pull up to a village and there's a lot, they have Lund skiffs everywhere out there. I remember seeing, being at that camp where my wife was watching those salmon going by and clicking them off, seeing a lot of people on the river, whole families in the boats, and not a life jacket on them or in the boat. And I think this is going to end up being somewhat of an urban bill. You know, the urban folks are around population centers where there's police enforcement and routine checks of by protection and whatnot, and park rangers the urban folks are going to end up bearing the brunt of this as far as the fines and the enforcement. And I think it's not going to be enforced in rural Alaska. You know, if this bill just had, I have parts of this bill I really like, requiring a 13-year-old or under to wear a life jacket, absolutely. I mean, I just think that's something I think we should do. You know, I've got friends that are in professionals in the tourist business, and they're concerned that this is going to be another place that they can stub their toe, another regulation, another law, and then if they have a safety violation, I have one friend that has a operation in Glacier Park, there's concern that if you have a simple safety violation, you might not be able to operate in some of those areas, and the feds might not look too kindly on renewing your permit if you have a violation. Kids don't float. I think it's one of the best things. I associate myself with the remarks from the finance co-chair. That's one of the best things I think we've done is put those life jackets on there. Although I had a friend here in Juneau that went down and looked at the life jackets at Ock Bay. There was a whole slew of them there, and he told me that there was only one of them that was Coast Guard approved, and that's in Juneau. So that's a little bit problematic. I'd like to, if I might have just a little bit of leave of the body, introduce to you a really good friend of mine. This is my life jacket, and I'm alive because of this life jacket. And a number of years ago, I went into a river with a friend of mine, and my friend is still in that river. And I don't believe that this, you know, if we'd have done an inspection on our boat, it would have passed, because there were life jackets in that boat. And I had a sound device on me. It was my .44 Magnum. If I didn't have that on me, I would have perished. Because after I spent about a mile swim downriver, about a mile, I was so weak I could barely get out of the river. And as Providence would have it, the only other people around for 50 miles happened to show up and figured out something was going on when they saw the boat that I was in run up on a gravel bar, and they decided to come down and investigate. It looked kind of suspicious to them, so they were driving down the river, and that person was going by, and I remembered I fired in the air, and they didn't hear me. So I lowered it, and I aimed at him, and then a little bit above him, behind him, and I fired again, and he heard that one. He didn't hear that one. The next one was going in the boat, because I honestly didn't have very much longer to live as hypothermic as I was. But I don't believe that just simply having a life jacket in your boat guarantees that people are going to have the common sense to put them on. And having this equipment, I mean, I had survival equipment. I had my fire starting and all that other stuff in the boat, and I didn't have a way to get a fire going. And there I was in my stocking feet after I kicked my boots off, because even with a life jacket, I was being pulled underwater and severely compromised. So I'm intimately familiar, like a member from Juneau, with people dying in the water. It's a horrible thing to have to call your friend's wife. So I'm very intimately familiar with this. So, but in spite of that, I'm going to be voting. I won't be supporting the bill, because I think it's not necessarily going to guarantee it saves lives. It might go a long way, but I think the enforcement is going to be selective. I think we're creating another layer of bureaucracy. And so it's a tough vote for me. I lost a lot of sleep last night. Thank you.
Representative Berkowitz. Thank
you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now, I, too, am probably here because I wear a life jacket all the time. And it's not just what people know about. Like my friend from Eagle River, I grew up on the water. And I spent a lot of time doing things my parents didn't know about on the water, getting into situations that I probably shouldn't have gotten into. Broke a lot of boats, spent a lot of time drifting around out in bays and out in the ocean. I always wore a life jacket. Worked in boats. I worked in a boat, small boats down in the Antarctic. Flipped one on a beach landing once, Mr. Speaker. Without a life jacket, it's too cold in those waters to do anything. Then, of course, everyone knows about what happened to me just a few years ago here. And I'll say again, the life jacket is what makes me able to stand here today. Now, this law isn't going to guarantee part of an education process. Even this discussion we're having here, this is a forum that we're using to reach out and explore. explain to the people of Alaska, life jackets can save lives. They're not going to save your life if you're not wearing them. You have to wear them. So, I'm a strong proponent of life jackets. I'd like to remind the body what my friend from Nome said about me on my birthday. He said, I'm pro-life jacket, and I vote.
Representative Croft.
Just a quick point. There was an issue raised about whether this would be a tool to prohibit access, and I think specifically to prohibit access by motorized watercraft, the closing of areas. On page 14 of the bill, the new version, if I could just read that short section, Mr. Speaker.
No objection?
On lines 1 through 2, it says, nothing in this section authorizes the department to prohibit a use of or access to the water of the state by a person or user group. So at least that concern has been, authority has been explicitly taken away, and it shouldn't be a concern of this particular piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Crow. Any further discussion? Representative Coghill?
Just one last comment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was raised on the Tanana River, and have seen the Tanana River take many friends, both with and without life jackets, and those who have had safety training and those who haven't. And I think that those communities that live on the river or deal in commercial fishing have made it an effort, a priority, to educate. We have many laws already on the books. What we're doing with this particular law, it seems to me, is creating a bureaucratic machine to carry out those laws by taking over Coast Guard duties. At this point, I have been satisfied that we will do it as well as Coast Guard, and in the continuance that what we're showing as a fiscal note is really going to do what we expect to do. It's got to grow from there with some of the regulatory authority being given them, and not, to me, not satisfying my mind that we're going to keep it limited. Not knowing every single word of the bill, I'm just a little cautious about. one last comment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was raised on the Tanana River and have seen the Tanana River take many friends, both with and without life jackets, and those who have had safety training and those who haven't. And I think that those communities that live on the river or deal in commercial fishing have made it an effort, a priority, to educate. Now, we have many laws already on the books. What we're doing with this particular law, it seems to me, is creating a bureaucratic machine to carry out those laws by taking over Coast Guard duties. At this point, I have been satisfied that we will do it as well as Coast Guard, and in the continuance that what we're showing as a fiscal note is really going to do what we expect to do. It's got to grow from there with some of the regulatory authority being given them, and not, to me, not satisfying my mind that we're going to keep it limited. Not knowing every single word of the bill, I'm just a little cautious about growing a bureaucracy at this time in a particular fiscal situation. And since many of these laws are already in place, since the Coast Guard does such a good job, since many of the communities are offering boating safety, and then the other aspect is some of the organizations that are civic-minded, from Boy Scouts to boating safety organizations, have done a good job. We don't want to take that away from them. I appreciate the inclusion of them in here, but I think we might end up diminishing some of that. So I agree with the need. I'm just a little cautious about it. I do, even though we have in here that it's not going to prohibit it, there are ways to intimidate people from waterway use. And at this point, I'm a little cautious about going in and having the DNR be a part of regulating that. And so I'll be voting against it, but not against the idea. I'm really pleased that the discussion is going on. But at this point, I think we're still not there.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having lived 56 years on an island in the Gulf of Alaska, I won't bore you with all the experiences that I might have had in the water and around the water. But I think that the issue of why it's important that we pass this bill needs to be brought forward again, because we had discussion about whether we should pass a bill that creates a new cost for the state of Alaska, whether we should put life jackets out and all of this. When you get into the real issue around it, and that's education, 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 education. I don't care how much we spend on education. If it's an issue of saving lives, then that's exactly what we should be doing. We already have a very small program called the Alaska Marine Safety Education Program that has been going on for a couple of years. And I can give you a list of probably 20 or 30 or 40 different people who have come forward over the last few years when that budget item has come up and have it directly related their life savings to the fact that they were educated through a system. And that system is in our school system right now. We can expand that system. We can save more lives. We do need help from a bill like this. It's no different than what you're going to tell me is that we shouldn't have a bill like this because for whatever reason. Maybe we shouldn't have laws that say that we can't speed down the road and jeopardize other people's lives. I mean, the whole issue is saving lives and the educational aspect of it. This bill will make the difference. I encourage everybody to vote yes.
Ready for the question? Representative Hudson, then wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, first of all, I really appreciate the level and the sincerity in the debate here. I really appreciate the work of the three committees that heard this before we got it to the floor of the House. Mr. Speaker, if I could just respond to my good friend, the co-chair of Finance. And just to let him know and everybody else know that in this year's pilot program, which the Coast Guard authorized the state to conduct through the very organization we're asking to establish on a permanent basis, they bought 5,000 new life jackets and put them in 200 places. And we know of at least five lives that were saved by virtue of that thing. So I believe you're going to see, my good friend, I think you're going to see that that is becoming an essential element of this program. It's already been said, but on page 14, we put in the bill, I think at the request of my good friend, former chairman of the Resources Committee over here, the fact that this cannot be used to deny access. There are no new law enforcement officers called into this play, just two or three people to administer the registration. It's
It's the same regulations that are now in law. We now have both the federal law and the state law, and it draws the two together, uniformity. We now have a particular type of water markings in various lakes and rivers and things of this nature, and a different system out as you come into that particular lake. This will call for uniformity in that respect. We'll continue to work with the Coast Guard, but, Mr. Speaker, they're not just there to save lives or to try to do those kind of things. They're on the coast because they're doing aids to navigation, and they're doing law enforcement and search and rescue and training and things of this nature. So we'll have uniformity both in state and federal laws, and I think that's going to be a benefit to the people. So I'd urge people to vote yes.
Thank you, Representative. Question before the body. Representative Ogun, brief it is. Take a brief at ease while we find our majority leader. Order. If there is no further debate, Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I put a call on the House.
There is a call on the House. Take a brief at ease until the call is satisfied. Satisfied? Would the House please come back to order? The question before the body, shall committee substitute for HB 108 finance amended pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk?
34 yeas, 5 nays.
So, committee substitute for HB 108 Finance Amendment has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on the passage of committee substitute for House Bill 108 Finance amended be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's agenda?
CS for House Bill 191, Finance, entitled An Act Relating to Charter Schools. We're in third reading.
Is there debate? Brief it is. House, please come back to order. Representative Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When public education, or so-called public education, got started in this country, it was always very, very local. Local families, local parents got together and formed a school, and they controlled it. And slowly but surely, as we've become more urbanized, our school districts have gotten larger, and some of them approach the size of small countries. And there's been several efforts over the years to get parents a chance to have more influence in local schools. Certainly one of those was a site-based management plan, first heard about in Chicago 20 years ago. And what has been more popular and doing better in our country in the last 6 or 7 years, including heartily supported by our president, is the charter school movement. Now there are something over approaching 2,000 of them operating in the country. And it is indeed a genius concept that allows a group of parents or educators to petition the local controlling body to start a special purpose school. Almost all of them have to meet the state core education requirements, certainly in our case, and to pass the competency tests. 1995, before I got here, quite a group of you worked together on Senate Bill 88. And you passed Alaska's charter school bill. Certainly after I was elected, Betty Davis, who worked on that, and I met to talk of many things, but she said the bill was the best that you could do at the time, given the opposition and the environment, and that it desperately needed help. Her view was that the charter schools wouldn't make it the way the bill was written, and she encouraged me to revisit it. I've worked at it. For 3.5 years, and what you have before you is not the best. But once again, I think the best that we could do at this point, particularly given our fiscal restraints. Every expert that I know, including a couple of members of the Anchorage School Board, but people in the charter school movement, tell me that our charter school law passed in 1995 is the, if not amongst the weakest in the entire nation. It is the most difficult bill under, or set of state laws under which to operate a school, charter schools. The charter schools are struggling in our country, in our state, and several more of them are wanting to get started, but trying to figure out how to make it work. The bill that we finally got to House Finance last spring changed a part of the definition in what we did in Senate Bill 36. And took charter schools from being counted as an alternative school and just had them counted as an ordinary school. That would have made a significant difference. And the charter school people would say a fairer allotment of the distribution of money. That one carried a $3.5 million fiscal note, as I remember. We've worked from last spring until just a couple, 3 weeks ago with Finance and Department of Education, now Department of Elder Development and Education, not DOE, it's D or something, EED. These changes are hard on us old folks. And the product that's before you is what came out of House Finance, and I think is an excellent piece of work. Doesn't do everything we need to keep charter schools going, but it'll give them a stronger lifeline that'll keep them going and give them a little hope as they go on. It does a few housekeeping things. It doubles the limit on the number of them in our state from 30 to 60, and it removes the geographical distribution that was mandated in the 95 law. That's particularly important to me because the delightful senator from the other body, from Rampart, and I share great passion for the preservation of native language schools. And one of the strategies we're working on is to allow people in communities to have a school that puts an emphasis on preserving the local language, and taking out the geographical limit will give more chance for more rural communities. What you have before you takes away the sunset bill, which was starting to bite a few people that were trying to get the real estate, because getting a contract for a real estate for long enough was starting to bite them. It extends their contract period, which is also a problem with some real estate owners who said, wait a minute, if I'm only going to be here a year, it's going to be hard for me to justify the leasehold expenses, so on. It also opens for some of them another possibility for facilities, and that is to be able to use buildings that qualify for public buildings and meet those codes, but don't necessarily meet the more stringent code for a school. I talked with the fire inspectors when they were here, and so on. The bill makes it that's permissive only if the superintendent and or the board at his choice agrees any change from that standard. Fire marshals will tell you, you still got to have sprinklers, still got to have smoke detectors, you still got to have the alarm system, and you got to have their approval, and they will make sure the only other issue is flammable materials and egress. The last thing, and this is where we're going to have some contention here today, is on the money. This one opens the budget process for the charter school folks to be able to see where the money they're getting and where the money that they're not getting is going and where it comes from. And some hope that they're getting the fair share. The charter schools in my district are getting somewhere around $3,200 to $3,400 per student, roughly. If you average the student per student across the district, I think it comes around at $7,600, $7,800. They're saying, where's the other money going? And this bill would say the district has to show them. And interesting, I think a couple of the districts, I'm sure some of you have heard from them, are saying, oh my goodness, we can't do that. We're not asking for minute-by-minute accounting for everybody that could possibly work on a related issue. We're only asking that the books that any well-read, well-run enterprise has be open so that folks can see. And I don't believe I'm betraying a confidence when I say that Commissioner of EED, or whatever it is, the old DOE, Department of Education, said this is the kind of information that they ought to have. They don't have it, you know, something wrong with the way it's being managed. So, and by the way, all the districts are not having that problem. Certainly, I understand Matt Sue. They're getting $2,000 more per student for their charter school kids up there than in a couple of other districts around, including my own. So I would encourage you to be a yes vote on this. If we don't do this, several of the charter schools now that are staggering along the edges are going to quit. And a bunch of them that are wanting to get started are going to lose heart. We've got to give them hope, and we've got to give them a chance to make it. In addition to the native language schools, there's one that's wanting to start rallying around the Mandarin Chinese. There's a group that wants to start a charter school for deaf students. Another group that wants one for aviation technology and a whole bunch of other things out there that people want to rally around. I have a lot of passion about this bill. I have a lot of passion about education. And I'm going to get on the edge of offending some of you who are going to fight over this one. But for those of you that want to vote against it, let me give you some good reasons to vote against this bill. If you don't think that parents can be trusted to be involved in the management and direction of children's education, I'd encourage you to vote against this and not give parent-directed education a chance, or any more of a chance. This will sound pejorative, and it probably doesn't apply to anybody here, but if change is unsettling for you, or if experiments are, if that's scary, don't do this. Let them die. Because some of the charter schools that start are going to fail. And a failure, if you're not willing to risk, because there's a chance of failure, don't give these charter schools any more hope. Some of them are. A lot of well-meaning and some of them naive people out there. Some of them will fail. There's some folks who were here when the original charter school bill was crafted, people I respect who said, Fred, it was designed to fail. This was an effort to throw them a bone so that we could say, oh yeah, charter schools, we tried that. It didn't work. And if you don't want them to work, don't vote for this bill, because this will give them some hope and a chance of surviving. One more group of you that should vote against this. Those of you that want charter or vouchers and for public money to private schools, charter schools give flexibility and parental choice and input into our public schools. If you want the public schools to not have flexibility, not be able to satisfy a lot of folks, and get more frustration and more disapproval, then vote against this bill and vote against charter schools, and you'll get a quicker path to frustration and vouchers. That's all I have for now. I'll have a little more in wrap up. Thank you.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to go back to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment.
There is objection. Representative Sisna.
I believe that there are amendments, a specific amendment that I have to make, and I believe there's another one as well, that would improve this bill. I believe that there are sections of this bill that possibly, or there are things in this bill that need to be amended because it has things that are good for all of the state. It has things in it that are not beneficial to specific schools in Alaska. And I think if it's going to be evenly good and fair to all schools, there need to be those, at least the chance on the for the body to vote on those amendments.
Thank you, Representative Sisna. Any further discussion? Senator Logan?
Mr. Speaker, to the motion, we've already had this bill in second reading, and there's been ample opportunity to amend it if it wasn't done then, and I don't see why we should have to go back now, so I encourage members to vote against going back.
Representative Dyson?
Thank you. Those battles were really fought in finance, and I think that was really the venue to do it. But there are several amendments floating around out here, and every one I've looked at guts this bill. And so if any of the ones I've seen succeeds, I will speak eloquently against my own bill, because we have absolutely, it's unfair to give these charter schools any hope that we support them going forward. And with a gutted bill, we need to just say the message, it's over, and that's fine, and you had your chance, and it didn't work. So I'm not in favor of the amendments I've seen, and I believe that most of the folks who are proposing them are naively doing it in good faith, not understanding how profoundly they're gutting that movement and our proposed legislation.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I was surprised to hear the Representative Palmer speaking out against further debate on the subject. There's a certain compelling reason to be consistent. When you want people to listen to you, you ought to listen to other people. And I want to hear what is going to be said about these amendments. I don't know which way I will go. I am concerned that some of the tone of the earlier portion of this debate indicates or impugns motives and suggests reasons why people might support or oppose a bill. That seems to me, Mr. Speaker, to be over the line. But I think it's appropriate for us to consider these proposed amendments as an entire body. That's what we're here to do. We're here to talk. We're here to listen. We're here to shape public policy.
Further discussion? The question before the body is, shall we? Representative Phillips? Brief it is. Please come back to order. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Question before the body. Shall we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, that being amendment number one, or new amendment number one? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk?
16 yeas, 19 nays.
So the motion to return to second reading, to second reading has failed. Is there further debate of the bill? Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the work, time, and effort that the member from District 25 has put in on this issue. When I sat on the HES committee, many of the issues that were alluded to by certain amendments that have been passed around were discussed and debated. When I contacted my school district at that time, their attitude was pretty laissez-faire, you know, whatever, so it comes out. I'm feeling a little bit put in a pinch because just recently they've finally taken a stand after a year of not having done so, and have finally said they're very concerned about the accounting procedures that we have established in Section 5 as well as Section 2. I would like to pass on to the body that I wanted to express those concerns that have been raised by my school district, given that the amount of accounting and the time and the specificity in which we are outlining the requirements within the bill, and just encourage the member from District 25 to take another look. I know that he has very legitimate concerns about taking or opening the issue much further, but please take another look, consider those issues. I appreciate the remarks that he made relating to the charter schools and allowing school districts and parents allowing them to be flexible and to inject a great deal of innovation into the public education system as well as choice, which is why I'm ultimately supporting this piece of legislation. It draws people in, it gives organizations and individuals the ability to shape the educational system that their children are in a manner which they feel is appropriate with the appropriate guidelines and with the appropriate accountability, both for public funds as well as for the academics. So, Mr. Speaker, I would encourage folks to support 191. I think that the charter schools that I've dealt with and that I've heard from have been doing quite well and have been providing quite a service to our educational community as well as the state in whole. But I would just like to encourage the member, the prime sponsors, to review some of the requirements. There needs to be some type of standard, I agree, to ensure that there's an appropriate accounting for public funds going to charter schools, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. But to what length do we go to provide that accounting to ensure that the appropriate money goes to those children? That's sort of the devil in the details type of issue. And I don't know if we'll ever resolve it, but I would encourage continued involvement there.
Representative Bryce. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move that we go back to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment, that being number two.
There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just ask the leave of the body to have a brief debate on the merits of the amendment. I apologize. I was, because of plane schedules, was unable to be here when the bill was in fact debated. I wasn't able personally to offer the amendment. It does address issues that are of significant concern to our school district. And I've been asked by them to offer this amendment, and it's for that reason that I'm moving it. I hope that we can discuss the amendment at the appropriate time. Right now, I'm just speaking to the opportunity to be heard.
Further discussion? Representative James, as to returning to second?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In response to my objection to going back to the second reading for a specific amendment, and the argument that was given by the previous speaker that he wasn't available to make this amendment when the bill was up in their second reading, and I suspect that one of the reasons was because it was late in the whole program when our school district came out in opposition to this particular part of the bill. But piggybacking on what the sponsor of this bill has said, it gets the bill, Mr. Speaker. And because it gets the bill, I don't believe that we should take the time now to go back and do it for those purposes. And it is, without speaking too much to the amendment and what it does do, I guess I'm really kind of limited as to how far I can go with this issue, is that I believe this is a very critical issue. There's an awful lot of people depending on this piece of legislation. And for us to take time and effort to try to gut the bill is not appropriate at this time in third reading. And I would urge us to vote against going back to second.
Representative Davies, I will allow you, for purposes of equity, to identify the intent, not debate it, but to identify the intent of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that latitude given the previous debate. I do not believe that this amendment guts the bill. In fact, I think that the way it's put forward, that it allows, there are many pieces else in the bill that are reasons to support the bill and have the bill.
Please identify what it does.
So what all the amendment does is the amendment deletes the portion of the bill that it calls for detailed accounting. It leaves in a piece that has to do with increased funding. And so for those reasons, I believe that it does not gut the bill. But I can't debate that. What the amendment does or doesn't do any further than that and be out of order, so I appreciate your latitude.
Thank you, Representative Davies. Further discussion of returning to second. Representative Dyson, again, without debating the merits of the amendment, the debate is to whether we should or should not return to second reading.
You know what I said before.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Representative Berkowitz.
Thanks very much. Again, Mr. Speaker, we're in a position of giving a member of this body an opportunity to be heard. The representative behind me who is attempting to introduce this amendment was unavailable. I think it's incumbent upon us to give people as much voice as possible whenever we can. And so I would ask the body to allow us to go back to second and to learn what he has to say and debate it.
Representative Sisson.
Mr. Speaker, a number of days ago, I voted to close discussion. And in listening to the debate after we made that decision, I realized that I had made a vote in error. And that one of the precious things about this body is that we're able to listen to each other, to hear different views, to listen to them respectfully, and then to make our own decisions based on what we ourselves know and what our experiences are and what we've learned. And to not allow us to go back to discussion, and part of the reason that this was held over was so that we would have the opportunity to speak to the school board members and the members of the public that were concerned about schools about this bill, to get briefed on how they feel about it. And that's the reason for holding it over. I can't personally understand why we would fear debate when that is what this body is for. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Dyson?
Would you call the House, please?
Call placed on the House. For the information of the body, we are about 15 minutes into some committee time, and while I recognize that we want to have a full discussion here, we also have a committee process to respect, and I would ask consideration for those committees that are now being held up. Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there was discussion on the floor as it related to returning to second reading in regards to something I said on the floor the other day. There is a big difference in calling the question and a question of returning to second reading. It is not the same thing. And so I just don't want to have words put into my mouth. Thank you.
Representative Barnes. Further discussion? Question before the body is, shall we return to second reading for the purposes of considering amendment number 2? Members may proceed to vote. The clerk, please lock the roll. Madam Clerk.
16 yeas, 23 nays.
So we have failed to return to second reading for the purposes of consideration of amendment number 2. Is there further discussion? Ready for the question. Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I listened very carefully to the arguments by the sponsor of this piece of legislation, and I gathered by his testimony before us that he was pro-charter school. But it's kind of curious when you look at the legislation itself, it kind of makes you wonder that if you were really wanted to give charter schools difficulty, that one should vote for this piece of legislation. Now, I can see the intent here to increase the number of charter schools. Perhaps geographically we made a mistake and could have been a little bit more generous and have more charter schools available. And then, of course, the fiscal plan of having a 5-year contract instead of a 1-year, 5 years to 10 years, that's good. That's fiscally sound. That helps. But then when you go a little bit further, you look at another aspect of it, and that is allowing public buildings to be used and the codes that are used for public buildings, which are approved by the fire marshal. Now, the difference between the codes for a public building and a public school are considerably different. Now, naturally, being the charter schools are trying to save money, and they go out for a 10-year contract, they're going to be year 5, they're going out looking there, there's going to then be built in discussions and negotiations and arguments as to the building. Then you go further here and look at the itemized deductions that are itemized aspects of the accounting procedures that the school district has to go into. It becomes basically pretty cumbersome. Now, who is the group that decides whether or not a charter school should be established? The school board. Why would a school board want to put themselves in a position to have to go through all this itemized account thing, basically even talking about the income coming from the municipality to the schools, and also arguing about the public school buildings? Now, any superintendent worth his salt would not agree to use a public building codes for K through 6 or maybe even K through 12 because of the liability out there. I see what we've done here is built in some questions which would lead a school board not to consider even entertaining a charter school. So I think what the sponsor has said and what the bill does is counterproductive, and I could not support it the way it is written here. Be one pro or con this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Reisner. Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to make a couple of comments regarding the concerns by various school districts that have been articulated here by my colleagues about the section of the bill dealing with administrative information cost. I would suggest that they put on their reading list the book by Bill Gates, Business at the Speed of Thought, Building a Digital Nervous System. It talks directly to this type of situation in organizations that here in the information age, that type of information is what the computers is all about. Corporations are going that direction willy-nilly, and that public organizations, I think, should be learning and how to do that themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kaplan. Representative Smalley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I consider myself a strong supporter of education. I'm a very, very strong supporter of parental involvement. I've got over 3 decades invested in public classroom education in this state. I still consider myself a teacher today, as well as I consider myself a learner. I'm a real strong supporter of local control. You know, I support charter schools. I think that they, in given time, will be very successful. The existing statutes or the existing legislation that's in effect basically requires a time frame for accountability. What this bill will do will increase the programs without that accountability, without that check. And that concerns me. Additionally, it will pull existing funds from within a school district that are already in decline due to decreased enrollments because the money follows the students. And so it'll take those funds from existing classrooms and buildings and place them in other classrooms and buildings. And these are the same two concerns that my local school board brought to my attention.